This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, FSTV's on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Police departments across the country have increasingly been investing in surveillance technologies that are violating the civil rights of ordinary Americans. The spying encompasses a broad spectrum, including license plate readers, biometric surveillance, X-ray vans, so-called predictive policing software, and even social media monitoring. Civil rights groups like the ACLU have found that the technologies are particularly targeting communities of color and poor Americans. Now, activists are pushing back by launching a coordinated wave of legislation in 11 different cities nationwide to limit police surveillance of the public. My guest is Nicole Ozer. She is the Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Director with the ACLU of California. Welcome to the program, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we've covered these issues on, say, a local level in Southern California with the LAPD before, and we have often heard of individual stories of police surveillance coming to light in individual cities. But can you give us a broad view of how police departments are nationwide moving in the direction of not just, you know, law and order and actually law enforcement, but spying on people, something that we thought was relegated to the NSA and federal government agencies, but now police departments are doing it?
Yes, I mean, you know, billions, the reality is that billions of dollars a year is being spent by the federal government, not just on surveillance by the FBI and the NSA, but $1 billion a year is actually being sent down to local police departments across the country, from California to New York, to buy and build really sophisticated surveillance systems. And most of this is done in secret. You know, this money that's coming down from the federal government really circumvents a lot of the local oversight that used to happen when police wanted to buy a surveillance technology. They used to have to go to the city council or the board of supervisors and say, I want money to do X or to buy this technology. But because the money is coming down from the federal government, it also often circumvents, we found, this local oversight. And so police departments and sheriff's departments have been for the last decade and increasingly in the last few years buying really sophisticated surveillance technology in secret, without the public knowing about it, without it being public debated, and this technology being used out on the streets without any kind of use policies in place to protect civil rights and civil liberties. So
is it essentially operating in sort of a legal gray area? Because if it was local or government, state government money or municipal government money, then it would be, it would have to operate under existing laws preventing such things. But because it's coming from the federal government, is it circumventing the laws that are in place?
Well, two things have happened. It's circumventing local oversight. It's circumventing the ability for the public to hear at a city council meeting or a board of supervisors meeting that something is being considered. So it's circumventing sort of the local debate and the community control that should happen whenever policing decisions are being made. And technology has advanced exponentially in the last decade, and a lot of both state laws and federal laws are really outdated. So for example, the federal law that's supposed to control electronic surveillance hasn't been updated since 1986, before the internet existed. And we're just starting to see courts review things like Stingray cell trackers. So it's not that because the money is coming from the federal government that it's not controlled by laws, but the issue is that the kind of community discussion that should be happening whenever a surveillance technology is being considered isn't happening right now. We see it in California, we see it in New York, we see it in every single state that tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars are coming down to buy things like stingrays, to
What
buy
are
things like
stingrays? Let's
license
talk
plate
about
readers.
some of these technologies, because it's a very broad spectrum of surveillance that ranges from the deployment of X-rays, which could harm people's health, to social media surveillance. And one of a part of the spectrum is this stingray technology of a cell phone surveillance. What exactly are stingrays and how widespread are they?
Stingrays are cell tracking devices. They're devices that the police deploy that actually mimic a cell tower and trick your phone into thinking it's communicating with a cell tower when it's actually communicating with a police device that says where your phone is located. Police use this to try and locate phones of potential suspects, but when they use it in a certain community, it doesn't just impact the phone of the suspect, it impacts all the phones in the vicinity of that device. So there was recently a filing to the Federal Communications Commission about stingray use in Baltimore and how it was disproportionately, often being used in communities of color and impacting the ability of people of color in Baltimore to be able to use their phones to contact 911 to communicate with other people. And these stingray devices have been bought by communities all across the country, many here in California, but everywhere. And the only time it's ever been publicly debated about whether or not to buy a stingray was one time here in Santa Clara County, and that actually gave rise to the passage of a surveillance ordinance in Santa Clara County that said whenever any kind of surveillance is being considered, it needs to go through the Board of Supervisors.
Now, Nicole, does the stingray device actually prevent, essentially impact your phone's ability to make outgoing calls?
It interrupts communications. The purpose is to find a phone, but it increasingly has become clear. The federal government tried to keep the existence of stingrays secret for many, many years. They tried to keep information about how it might impact innocent people secret for many, many years, but through sort of tireless Public Records Act requests and Freedom of Information Act requests, information has finally come out in the last few years about the real impact of stingrays and how they're being used disproportionately in communities of color and the impact it has on, hundreds and potentially thousands of innocent people who may live in that neighborhood as well.
What about the X-ray vans? Tell us about this. It's basically that police are going around in vans using X-rays to, presumably see if people are carrying some type of weapons, etc. But, for people who might be worried about being exposed to radiation, this just can't be good.
A lot of this, when I talk about some of this technology, some of it really seems to sort of be, something from a George Orwell book. But there are sophisticated surveillance technologies. There's also, vans, the sort of combine multiple types of surveillance technologies, X-ray vans, vans that have high-powered stingray devices. A lot of the police sort of think of them as sort of police departments that are on the move. And many of these, most of these vans aren't publicly debated or the types of surveillance that's being used. We also see not just physical surveillance, but a rapid increase in surveillance, online surveillance, particularly of social media. We just here in California did a Public Records Act request to over 63 agencies in the county and found that there's been a rapid proliferation of surveillance of social media, many of which is, targeting activists. Social media surveillance being used by local law enforcement where, hashtags like Black Lives Matter or Time for Change or I'm unarmed or don't shoot. Those are the kinds of things that they're looking for. And it's really bringing activists into this web of surveillance. And again, we surveyed 63 law enforcement agencies. 20 of them were already either using or had acquired surveillance technology. None of them provided any evidence of public debate or conversation about what the civil liberties impacts may be, and none of them produced a use policy that would limit how the police used this surveillance technology and how they were actually going to be protecting civil rights and civil liberties. So
And
we've got huge issues happening across the country, and it's why you're seeing this powerful coalition coming together to push for local ordinances to create change and make sure there's community control.
right. I mean, organizations like Black Lives Matter in particular, and many, many activist groups these days, if not the overwhelming majority, use social media to organize. And so when police are monitoring people in those realms, they have a direct line to, and you know, it's one thing to browse through social media in your free time, but if our tax dollars are paying police to surveil us on social media and our social media activity, that's pretty disturbing. So there's a whole spectrum, as I said, of these surveillance technologies, the backscatter X-ray vans, the body cameras as well, that have been offered up as a panacea for things like police brutality, but have often been turned around and used as methods of surveillance, et cetera. So let's talk now about how people are fighting back. I mentioned 11 cities around the country are putting up, are essentially introducing legislation. What are some of these cities? What sorts of legislation? I'm assuming each piece of legislation is sort of tailored to the local community.
Each piece of legislation will be slightly different, but the principles are all the same. It's to ensure that whenever any kind of surveillance technology is being considered in a community, that there is public debate and community input at the earliest stage of the process. These ordinances are really going to stop secret and discriminatory surveillance being out on the street. And make sure that whenever anything's being considered, there's public debate, there's community input, there is a thorough analysis of the costs of the surveillance. And when I talk about costs, I don't just mean money, but also what the civil rights and civil liberties costs will be of this surveillance technology. And a proposed use policy that if it were going to go forward, how would civil rights and civil liberties be safeguarded? And for those to be enforceable. So, as I said, right now, most of this sophisticated surveillance technology is just ending up in the street without any kind of public debate, without any kind of transparency or accountability or oversight. These ordinances are going to put back in the type of process, the type of important thorough evaluation, and to make sure that the right questions are asked and answered about surveillance technology before it's ever bought, before it ever is put on the street, and before it's ever ending up being used in a discriminatory way by police.
So it's I understand cities like Seattle, which is a very big city, but and also Washington, D.C., but even Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
You know, this issue of surveillance, of sophisticated surveillance technology, is not a big city issue or a small town issue. It's an all over the country issue. Billions of dollars is coming down to tiny towns and huge cities for really invasive technology. We found a few years ago that there was a city in California that had installed 25 surveillance cameras, yet they only had one traffic light. So that gives you an example of what levels of invasive surveillance technology are being put out in the country, and the complete disconnect between sort of the costs of the technology in terms of civil rights and the potential benefits of the technology.
Right. And just to bring up the fact, and I know we've talked about this before, but the fact that these are particularly often aimed at people of color, communities of color, low-income communities. I mean, it would be really interesting to see if the police was surveilling wealthy neighborhoods, neighborhoods that they just, in general, don't focus most of their resources on. Things like the so-called predictive policing, which unsurprisingly ends up concentrating police presence in poor communities and communities of color as well. There just seems to be very clearly targeting those communities that are historically targeted. But you also have cities like New York City and Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, on this list of 11 cities that are pushing back. That's pretty amazing.
No, absolutely. I live in Oakland, California, and I can tell you that, there's not where the data is out there about how the surveillance technology is used. It clearly is being used in communities of color and poorer communities. Data about how license plate readers have been used here in Oakland. A car that's in a higher income community may only have been captured by a license plate reader once or twice in a multiple year period, and you're getting huge numbers of recordings about people's license plates in other parts of the city. So it's absolutely true. And Oakland, for example, is one of the communities that's really moving forward on a surveillance ordinance. There's a privacy commission that has just started here in Oakland. From my knowledge, one of the first privacy commissions that has community members that will be advising the city council on all surveillance decisions, and they're drafting a surveillance technology ordinance that will make sure that all decisions get public debate, that there is this civil liberties analysis and civil rights impact analysis done, and that there's continuing oversight of any kind of surveillance technology that might be used in the community. So these ordinances are incredibly important to make sure that there are mechanisms in place to make sure the right questions are asked and answered, and secret and discriminatory surveillance doesn't continue to be deployed on the streets of our small towns and our large cities all across the country.
So, Nicole, if there are listeners and viewers right now thinking, well, my city needs to be on this list of 11, of this list of cities, let's make this number 11 grow much bigger. What can they do? Where is there one place on the internet where they can find details about the kinds of legislation people are introducing so that they can take them to their city council representative and say, I want you to sponsor this kind of bill?
Yes, there's a national website that just went out for this campaign where there's lots of information about the campaign.
And the ACLU's website on this particular issue is communityctrl.com. And I suppose they're also encouraging people to use the hashtag TakeCTRL, take control, TakeCTRL. So we'll post that information on our website later today. Nicole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Nicole Ozer is the Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Director with the ACLU of California. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com and on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.